In this episode of Smart Humans, we talk with Mark Gerson, who's the co-founder and chairman of 3i Members, the invite-only alternative investment network. We talk about how his background as an entrepreneur and curiosity has now brought him to nearly 20 years of investing into alts across all types of alts. He now uses this innovative crowdsourcing model to bring forward the best and smartest people across investments to bring all these ideas into one place. We cover a wide variety of investment opportunities, from airplane engines to Elvis collectibles to Bitcoin and other crypto opportunities.
Welcome to Smart Humans with Slava Rubin, presented by Vincent. In this alt investing podcast, Slava talks to amazing minds about their investment journey and finds out what it takes to make it in the markets. And now, here's your host and smart human, Slava Rubin.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Smart Humans. I am Slava Rubin, and I am very excited about today's guest. He is a philanthropist, an entrepreneur, an investor, and so many other things. We have Mark Gerson, who is co-founder and chairman of 3i Members. And not only that, also co-founder and chairman of United Hatzalah of Israel, as well as co-founder and chairman of African Mission Healthcare. Mark, thank you for joining us.
So great to be here with you, Slava. Thank you.
So let's just start with a jacket. What is the jacket all about? You told me that you always like to wear it.
Oh, yes. This orange is it's an orange sport jacket. I have three of them and I wear them 7 days a week. And the reason is this is orange is the color of United Hatzalah of Israel. And the reason why it's the color of United Hatzalah of Israel is because United Hatzalah has 7,000 trained and equipped volunteer medics all throughout Israel, whose mission is to get to the scene of effectively a 911 call, choking, bleeding, heart attack, stroke, sudden birth, in the 90 seconds that someone needs when calling in for that emergency. And the safest color at night, it has been shown, which is important because when one of our medics gets on his medically equipped motorcycle, which might be at night, we want him to be safe, of course. The safest color at night is orange. So orange is the United Hatzalah color, and I wear the sport jacket every day.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing it. Yes, everybody who's listening, you are on the Smart Humans podcast, and this is an investment podcast. But we wanted to make sure that Mark got a chance to talk about that, and we're going to have such a great conversation. So where we always like to start the conversation is, how did you even get into alts? You obviously have such a long and successful career. Can you just kind of get us where did it all start and how did you land where you are today?
It's a great question. I think my first alt investment was probably 05, 06, around that time. And it was from my friend Mitch Jacobs. And Mitch is the founder and was CEO of On Deck Capital, which has since gone public and sold. But in those days, Mitch was the founder and CEO, and he had some kind of alt product, and it's specific contours. I can't remember because it was so long ago, but it was some kind of alt product. And I remember thinking, this is so interesting. It's something I had never thought of before. It's a niche in the economy that when Mitch explained it, made a lot of sense. And it performed exceptionally well. I think the yields were something like in the low 20s or something like that. And it paid out regularly, did everything Mitch said. So I owe my introduction in alts to my great friend Mitch Jacobs and his founding and stewardship of On Deck Capital, which opened my eyes to this whole universe of investment possibilities.
But you're also an entrepreneur, right?
Yep.
Which is really the ultimate alt as well. Can you give us a background as to where you came from, how you got into entrepreneurial stuff, and how Mitch even thought of you to walk up to?
Oh, sure. So I co-founded Gerson Lammer Group, GLG, in 1998. And it was then what it is now, which is a network of industry experts who educate investment professionals, professional service people, corporate executives, so that they can make better investment and business decisions. So we started that in 1998. And I met Mitch probably shortly thereafter, and we became friends, and that led to my first alt investment in the early 2000s. And then I've started, as you mentioned, United Hatzalah of Israel. That's about 20 years ago. I started African Mission Healthcare, where we partner with Christian missionary doctors at Christian hospitals in Africa to provide clinical care and related services to the poor. We started that in 2010. And then I started 3i Members about 2.5 years ago.
Amazing. And can you give the audience just an understanding of scale of GLG?
Sure. So GLG is a global company with offices around the world, with experts in truly every category of human knowledge who are ready to consult with and educate business professionals about anything and everything, and to help professionals, no matter what they're looking at, no matter what they're considering, to make a more informed business or investment decision.
Nice. And you've been doing, and you're still involved. This is like 26 years later.
Yeah. 26 years later, we started in 98. Yeah. Still on the board. Very much so.
That's amazing. What's it like? You know, Jeff Bezos has a saying, which is like, it takes like 20 years to make a dent in the world. You're now up to almost 30 years. You're obviously making a dent. What's it like to still be at that company?
Oh, well, it's been a real great joy to be able to see the growth of the company, to be able to just see and hear about so many, genuinely countless examples of business people and investors we've educated, of experts who've been really gratified to share their knowledge. You know, that's been going on for a long time now. And every single time I hear about it, it's the same feeling of gratification.
Amazing. So going back to your alts journey, it starts in 2005, 2006 with Mitch, and now we're already up to 2024. And a few years ago, you even start 3i, which obviously gets exposure to a lot of great alternative investments. Can you just speak to the trajectory there between Mitch and 3i and today? You know, what did you get into? How did you evolve from one asset class to another, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, of course. So Mitch and the On Deck opportunity really educated me that that there's just so much creativity in the American economy. And one of the manifestations of that comes through alts, which is that there are so many ways to achieve non-correlated, high-yielding, dependable returns in areas that I had never thought of before, that sometimes I never knew existed before. And so not only was it were they commercially good from an investment point of view, but they're really interesting because every exposure to an alt and just was an education in something entirely new, an education into a niche, an education into something that was often esoteric, but always had an underlying logic to it that could be understood. I mean, this is when they were good and when they worked out and, you know, when I invested. But they always were esoteric, niche, and had a logic that could be understood. And all this rolled up into a really interesting educational process, in addition to being a really compelling commercial opportunity. And so what I saw about alts from the day Mitch introduced me to him to today is just you can't categorize them because the category is everything. I mean, basically, seemingly, every category of the American economy yields alternative investment possibilities, which are interesting and compelling. And there are so many of them. They're thinly or not at all marketed. And the challenge and really the opportunity is getting the access and the education so that one both has the opportunity as an equipped and is equipped to make the best possible decision about it.
You sound very curious as a person. Were you curious when you were younger? Are you still curious? Has that only increased or decreased? Speak to me about that.
Oh, it's what a great question. No, I mean, and I appreciate the question. No, I'm always very curious. And you know, we're actually approaching the Passover holiday right now. It'll be, you know, a week from today. And one of the great lead-ins in the Bible to the Passover holiday is when Moses says, when your children ask you. Now, it's very interesting because he didn't say if your children ask you. He said when your children ask you, because his presumption is that all children are curious. And the great challenge and opportunity is maintaining that curiosity through one's adulthood. So I've been fortunate to be able to do so. And alts is certainly one way to do it.
Amazing. So on this show, we try to cover all the various categories of alts, which is, as you said, hard to define.
Right.
We simplify it down to kind of six major categories, that being real estate and private credit in the yield orientation, venture and private equity, as well as crypto, as also the collectible side of art and collectibles. So when you hear those, let's call it six major asset classes, are you in all six? Do you avoid four of them. Can you speak to your perspective on each of them and if you have any exposure in them? And I'm happy to go through them one at a time if you'd like.
I think I'm in all six.
All right. Nice. You're on the right show.
Right, right. No, I'm happy to be here. Yes, absolutely. No, I'm in all six. And no, I wouldn't avoid anything. I mean, maybe a couple of things on principle, a couple of things. But by and large, these categories, each of the six categories that you list, there are interesting, compelling, lucrative, and dependable opportunities in each one and in subsectors of each one. And you know, you made the point before, Slav, about curiosity. So I think someone who's curious and looks at each of the six categories that you mentioned will find lots of opportunities. And there are no grounds for ruling any of them out and lots of reasons to include all of them.
So the classic view on a portfolio is 60-40 stocks and bonds. We obviously don't really believe in that. We right. believe there's a need for having a portion of that be in these alts. We always love to hear how people think about their portfolio mix and what percentage do you think alts is of your net worth?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know what percentage is a net worth. And of course, like everything in life, there are definitional issues. You know, what exactly is an alt? You define it broadly. So therefore, it would be, you know, a greater percentage. You know, asset allocation is a very interesting question. And I think it derives from one's age, from one's risk tolerance, and from one's financial obligations. And I think the exposure to alts and the ability to be educated about alts and to have confidence in alts will lead one more towards that kind of asset, because alts provide opportunities for things that are non-correlated, for things that are high yielding. And those are the characteristics that people usually look for in non-stock environments. Fine, but you can get them through alts, at least several varieties of alts, and get the yield that people look for in stocks.
Nice. Within the alt bucket, if it was its own pie chart, how do you think your pie chart breaks down since you're in all six? Usually it's, you know, heavier in real estate and private equity, i.e. venture. Is that how you would be as well?
I'm certainly exposed to all three, but now I would have to say crypto.
Oh, so a lot of crypto as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love absolutely. It.
I mean, of all six, I'm probably highest exposed to crypto. Or not probably, certainly highest exposed to crypto.
Amazing. We don't hear that every day on this discussion. So tell us more. So that pie chart, what would you say is the breakdown of those six slices?
At this point, I'm significantly exposed and happily exposed to Bitcoin, Ethereum, some Chainlink. I think it's a very compelling asset class for a variety of reasons, and it's come up a lot even recently at 3i members events, and we had a dinner dedicated to it last week, and there were several members who were making some highly informed and rigorously construed points about the asset class, which were just very compelling and kind of validated the decision of anyone who is significantly exposed, whatever that means for anybody, to Bitcoin, Ethereum, Chainlink, or any of the other at least major cryptocurrencies.
So at the moment, you'd say your stack ranking is crypto first, and then would it be venture or real estate?
Probably. It depends how you define the venture private equity mix, but certainly venture private equity and then real estate. Probably collectibles last, for no good reason, by the way. There are great opportunities in collectibles, so no good reason, just happens to be. Maybe I haven't paid enough attention to it, but maybe I should have. But no, so I'm in all of them, but crypto the most, certainly private credit, certainly venture, certainly real estate, certainly private equity, and some collectibles.
I mean, maybe you should be running this show. You have all the right exposures to be on this.
Well, I should just buy more Elvis collectibles because that's my hobby, and that would increase it. But unfortunately, the market's pretty thin.
Tell us more.
We're big Elvis fans in our family. We've been to Graceland twice, and we love Elvis's music, Elvis's life, the whole culture around it, and there is a collectibles industry around Elvis. But of course, that's just one small part of collectibles, and collectibles is so much more. It's such an interesting and compelling category. And, you know, getting to your point, Slava, you know, if I had done it 20 years ago, I mean, I think the category has done spectacularly well over 20 years. particularly in, now this is interesting because particularly in subcategories that everyone kind of wrote off 15 years ago, like baseball cards.
Oh, you know, yeah. Sports cards are doing incredible, in especially baseball cards, but also some of the other sports. Automobiles are doing incredible.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are just massive gains to be had. Now, some of that was a COVID pop, and some of it did drop back. But if you're into the very rare assets, which I'm guessing you're looking at with Elvis, trying to find those, let's call it one of ones, that thing that no one else can have. You seem to be a very curious, you know, competitive guy. You might be onto something that could be 10 or 100xing in the years to come.
Well, it's interesting about sports cards because I remember 15 years ago or so, I remember people saying it was just over and dead. And I didn't pay much more attention after that. And then, you know, our first child was born 15 and a half years ago. And then, you know, we started paying a little more attention to it when our second child was getting into it, and they weren't dead at all. Or maybe they were for a short period of time, but then dead wouldn't be the right analogy. Maybe they were dormant for a little while, but then cards really came back as a category. And it seems, and perhaps this is true about all collectibles, I don't know, but it seems that that the specific cards that have done well are the ones that would have been predicted to do well. In other words, it's not the long tail; it's the fat tail of cards have gotten all the value.
And, yeah, I mean, the key is really scarcity. Like in all things, it's about supply and demand. And the less there is of one of these things, the more that other people want it. And when it's the rare iconic one, there's only so many homes that are right on Central Park, right? And there's only so many Babe Ruth rookie cards or Mickey Mantle 1952 PSA 10s, which I think there's only three of, which
right.
one sold for over $10 million already, which no one ever thought of could even happen because it used to be just a few years ago that $1 million was a massive number. So now you see automobiles selling for nine digits, over $100 million, when people used to think that wow. $20 million was the cap for an automobile. So it is all fascinating. It's amazing that you go from Elvis collectibles to talking about Chainlink and BTC, or obviously talking about real estate and ventures. So,
well, you know, it's interesting, but so I think there's something we can learn from the durability of the sports card market when we think about crypto, which is how many people over the years, and probably even when we were kids, not that we cared or were paying any attention, but said, why would anyone pay so much for a piece of cardboard with a picture of a 24-year-old on it, right? And the answer, you just said, the Mickey Mantle cards are now going for over $10 million. There are other cards which are going for seven, perhaps eight figures as well. And so people give the same criticism to crypto. Like, it doesn't really exist. It's all vapor. It's all ether. This cuts kind of cynical criticism. Well, it's the exact same thing that was leveled at sports cards, which have shown their durability for more than 100 years.
Yeah, I would completely agree. And the other thing that I like to mention is, you know, you always have to think about the fraud and the negative. And sports cards have been through 100 years of potential fraud and more safety and infrastructure getting put in. And crypto is obviously much younger, being only approximately 15 years old. So the fact that it's already so advanced in fraud detection and security only speaks to the potential, if you put it on the same timeline, 100 years from now, or 85 years plus 15, you know, for crypto, God only knows where crypto is going to be in regards to the asset class being more institutionalized and being more taken on as a regular asset, right?
Well, I think you just made a really important point, institutionalized. So the state of Arizona recently announced that they were conducting a study as to whether they should include crypto as a part of the pension. Now, if the study comes back with a yes, and the answer is we should invest, I don't know, 0.2%, 0.5%, point anything percent in crypto, it's an enormous catalyst for crypto, because Arizona is not going to be alone. Other states are going to follow. And then if it becomes a thing that responsible institutions just do, which is have a very small allocation in crypto, it's a huge catalyst. That came up at a 3i dinner the other night. And it's just, there are so many other catalysts like that. I mean, people have said there was, at various points in history, you know, there's a bubble in sports cards or, okay, well, now they're doing better than ever. No, people say there's a bubble in crypto. Well, no bubble has ever burst and come back. And crypto has had something like 9 or 10 80% drops. And if it's a bubble, it wouldn't have had any comeback. Tulips didn't come back. The companies that went down 25 years ago in the internet bubble, they never came back. Now, Amazon was never part of the bubble, but there were plenty of companies that had extremely high valuations, were not based on anything fundamental or anything real. That was a bubble. They never came back. So therefore, crypto can't be a bubble, because when bubbles burst, abstractly, like we're talking about, and obviously physically, they don't get reconstituted. And so therefore, crypto can't be a bubble. It's something else, but it's not a bubble.
It's a volatile ride.
Exactly.
And, you know, speaking to your Arizona point about adding it to their institutional investments, I'm sure you know, but Larry Fink from BlackRock mentioned that they're going to look to add 1% into 1% of Bitcoin ETF into their income fund, which is obviously, I believe, one of, if not the largest fund in America in regards to putting all kinds of investors' money into the market. So it is a fascinating time to be navigating the crypto roller coaster. Since you're so
And I like to think about it in terms of expected return. Like, let's say, and I don't believe this for a second, like, let's say there's a 50% chance that Bitcoin goes way down, way down. And I think it's much lower than that, but let's say it's 50%. The other 50% is not a 2x. The other 50% is a 10, 100 more x, right? So however one accounts for the risk of a significant and permanent decline, what's the opportunity of a significant and growing incline? It's just a great expected return. I mean, someone did the expected return math. It would seem to me to be the best expected return in the economy.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And just to try to put some math into that for the listeners, you know, a lot of people are scared to put in money into highly volatile assets. But like you said, you can only lose your money one time.
Right.
But you could actually make your money many times. So to put that into math, if you have $100 and you put $2 into, let's call it crypto, the most you're going to lose is $2 and you still have $98. Right. But if your $2 actually 50x's, which could happen and has happened for many people, you just doubled your net worth on only $2 worth of risk.
Right, exactly. And it has happened. And there are lots of logical reasons as to why it will.
Nice. So since you're so bullish, and we'll end this part of the conversation on crypto, give me a dollar amount as to what you think it's going to hit in what time horizon. So give me some sort of prediction.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, at this point, it would only be obviously a guess, because look, the critics are right that there's no like dividend flow that you could actually, you know, put a historically agreed upon metric on. Fine. So it's hard. Look, if crypto as we're speaking today is around Bitcoin as we're speaking today is around 65,000. I mean, we're now in April of 24. It's 65,000. I would put an over under of 100,000 at the end of the year, and I would take the over.
Nice. We'll make sure to get back to you.
I'll give you, you know,
give me your more long term. Give me your 10-year horizon from now.
Well, I'll tell you. So I totally agree with this person. So Howard Morgan, really one of the great, most well-respected venture capitalists of all time, right? And so Howard has been, and he's also one of the original venture capitalists. And I was at a conference with Howard last year, and I don't remember exactly what Bitcoin was last year. And Howard just said that this is an obvious, easy 10x. He said probably a lot more over 10 years. So I'll go with Howard on that. I mean, I would say, you know, even from here, I'll go with Howard. Now, it was lower when Howard said it, but he'd probably say the same thing now. So I would say, here, it's just a matter of, it's a matter of time. I mean, how much time, nobody really knows. But, you know, are we talking Bitcoins at $500,000 10 years from now? I would not be surprised. In fact, I'd predict it. That might be my over-under. The over-under of Bitcoin in 10 years might be $500,000, and I probably take the over.
Perfect. And then in today's market, is there anything you're trying to avoid for this year, next year, et cetera, of those asset classes we've talked about?
No, there's nothing I'm trying to avoid. For the reason that there are compelling opportunities within each one of them.
Nice. What do you think about just the general market? Ignore crypto specifically, alt specifically. You know, obviously it's a dynamic time in regards to interest rates, geopolitical issues. There's always things going on. You have such an interesting perspective, founding GLG, connected to so many smart people. you know, filtering in so much interesting information into that brain of yours. So just give us an overview as to where you think the market's at, and you could take that wherever you'd like, public, private, anything.
Right. Well, let's take public. I mean, there are always very smart people who say the world's going to end and the market's going to crash, or even just the market's going to crash. There are always very smart people who say the market's going to crash. And very smart people have, by definition, intelligent reasons. That being said, I think with at least a medium or long-term perspective, they're completely wrong. America's not only the greatest country on earth, it's the greatest country in the human imagination. And one of the many things that make this such a great country that's so deserving of our enduring gratitude is the dynamism of the economy and the way it enables creativity to be channeled towards such economically productive ends. And therefore, I'm an enormous bull on America and an enormous, I don't have short-term views, but I'm an enormous medium and long-term bull on the American stock market and all that derives from it. So I think everybody should have a significant percentage of their asset allocation in American stocks.
What's the time horizon between short-term and medium-term view? Is that 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Oh, I would say, you know, I have no idea what things are going to do in the next day, week, even month. But just, you know, when we can say looking back, and no one ever says looking back like a month ago, or rarely, right? Normally when you say looking back, you're talking about some period of time, you know, 6 months, a year off, usually much longer. You know, so whenever one can say looking back, I think one would be happy to have bought stocks at whatever that time is. And, you know, one of the many interesting things about alts is that many of them do correlate to the stock market. So, you know, the same conversation that we're having about stocks could be applied to alts. I mean, you know, venture and private equity are probably precisely correlated to the stock market.
Sure. And are you a stock picker, meaning individual public stocks, or do you like to just expose into the indexes?
Just given who I am and what I do, I just generally do the indices.
Okay, perfect. So now let's transition to 3i. And this started in the early days of COVID, is that right?
We conceptualized 3i, in late 2020 and launched it about a year later.
So not everybody has heard of 3i, and obviously we want to learn more. So can you just tell us what is 3i and tell us how people can get involved?
Sure. So the name 3i actually means the Interesting Investment Institute. It just got shortened to 3i members. But the idea was my co-founder and I were saying, where did the most interesting and compelling investments that we had done in the previous several years come from? And we were specifically excluding angel investments where we got lucky once in a while and lost most of the time. And we're focusing on those kinds of opportunities that promised a 20 to 25% yield and delivered really exactly as projected. No better, no worse. You know, just the reliable 20, 25, sometimes even into the 30s% yield. So we had done these, but we asked ourselves, where did they come from? And the answer was, they always came from somebody else, but the process of getting them from somebody else to us was totally random. It was a function of who we had seen recently or who was thinking about us for whatever reason at that moment and thought to call us. And then we did some looking into it and either invested or didn't. So we said, well, this is not an efficient or an effective way to go about getting access to the kinds of investment opportunities that we seek. So there must be a better way. What must that way be? So we said the best alternative investments are all in the same place, which is in the portfolios of the best alternative investors. So we said, if we create a community of the best alternative investors, people who, to your point, Slava, are intellectually curious, people who are rigorous, people who have access to these opportunities, and people who want to pursue them in fellowship with others. We said, if we can create a community out of these people, everyone in the community will have consistent and reliable access to the kinds of opportunities that we now only have sporadic access to. So that's what 3i Members is. We created this community of individuals, all of whom invest significantly, eclectically, are intellectually curious, and are nice people. And this community gets together formally once a month, informally hundreds of times a year, to do a variety of things at this point. But the core of what we do is to access and consider in fellowship with others, alternative investments. And in fellowship with others is really important because alternative investments are very often going to be niche and esoteric, and therefore difficult for any one person to analyze or understand on his own. But when one joins a community, we found and we created, and one joins a community, there are always people who have the experience, the knowledge, and the insight that make it easier to make the kinds of investment decisions that make people comfortable. So 3i Members now has a little over 430 members. Everyone's either a founder, runs a family office, runs a fund, or is a professional athlete. And the community comes together to surface the deals and to consider them with the benefit of the advice and input of others.
Amazing. So for the benefit of the listeners, I'm not a member yet and would love to learn more right here so everybody can learn. So what does that mean exactly? So do I need to be invited? Do I need to be accepted? How much does it cost? What do I need to input as part of the community, or do I get kicked out? How can I invest or not invest? Do I get access to the deals, et cetera? So can you just run with that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Meaning like you're talking to me.
Yeah, all good questions. 3i Members is almost all by referral. So everyone in the community was either referred by someone in the community or knows someone in the community. It's the simplest business model ever, which is everyone just pays right now $15,000 a year, which means no fees on anything else. And that enables people to just, we want people considering ideas together, and we want people educating each other as to why they're investing and why they're not investing. We find it just as valuable when members really convince each other not to do something as when they convince each other to do something. We just want people helping each other make the best decisions for them. So everyone just pays $15,000 a year, and just at the end of the process, and there are 2 to 3 deals presented every month, and then a series of follow-ups where people come together and consider these opportunities with each other. Then if someone wants to invest, they can do so, and they do so in their own name.
Nice. So let's say there's some AI deal that's super hot. Will I quote unquote automatically have access to it, or could I maybe be lose out on it because I didn't move fast enough and the allocations are gone?
No member would ever lose out on something because it went too fast. It's always there's always a pretty rigorously defined time horizon as to when decisions have to be made, and then everyone in the community will have an opportunity to invest in anything presented on the platform. And everything on the platform, in order for something to get on the platform, so there's no expectation that any member will bring any deal. In fact, we have now over 430 members, and we're doing the membership gets presented 2 to 3 a month. So if everyone had one, we'd be in trouble. We only have time and space for like 30.
It sounds like a full-time job just managing the deals.
Well, it's all crowdsourced. I mean, our insight here is that the surfacing and evaluation of alternative investments is like the perfect application of crowdsourcing, so long as the crowd is right, which our crowd is. And members produce the opportunity. For an opportunity to be considered, a member has to have invested and said, I've been investing with this person or with this person and in this strategy for X amount of years. I've put, if they want to disclose, Y amount of money into it, and it's done very well for me. And now I'm just happy to share this opportunity with no benefit to myself with the other members of the community. And so that's how, and then members of the community will decide which opportunities get presented to the whole membership. And then the group, again, comes together, really a subgroup of those who are interested in the opportunity, come together to really assess it in fellowship. And then everyone makes their own decision. But it's really an application of crowdsourcing on the premise that a group of people who are founders, people who are family office professionals, people who have invested significantly, eclectically, rigorously, will have both access to the kinds of deals that everyone wants and the ability to help others rigorously assess them.
I am a big fan of crowdsourcing, having founded Indiegogo and helped pass the Jobs Act. So
right.
I'm a massive fan of this application. So super interesting. And the idea that any one person might have a good investment in their pocket is a great idea, but to try to aggregate them all of them together really brings all those small percentages, you know, much higher together.
Yeah, that, your insight is so right. And it's all about small percentages. I mean, you know, Slava, if you or I have a 0.1% chance of having a truly compelling alternative investment in any given month, then you bring 430 and growing every day. You know, you have that 0.1% moves to an 100% certainty of something that's interesting, compelling, and at least worthy of taking a serious look at. But you're right. It's all in the small percentage chance that we each have of having a really compelling opportunity at any one given point quickly becomes a certainty once you have a certain number of people together. And then, so every month there are genuinely interesting and compelling opportunities presented. And then each member has to make the decision in consultation, in fellowship with others as to what he or she wants to invest in or not invest in.
Amazing. I know it's only been a few years, but do you have like a case study or two of, you know, one of those investments that came out of 3i members that has already had some results positive?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the opportunities that are being presented now, well, they all derive from what members want. And what members want now is what one of our members in San Francisco, he said, I just want non-correlated high yielding income streams. I said, that's it. That's what people want. He defined it perfectly, non-correlated high-yielding income streams. And therefore, and of course, that might change when the economy changes. So will we be saying that in a year and a half? I have no idea. But that's what people want now, at least people collectively. Now, individually, people may want, and they do want, all kinds of other things as well. But that's what the group collectively seems to all want. It's one thing that all members seem to share. And these opportunities, you know, back to what we were saying before, they're esoteric, they're interesting, and they're often in pockets of the economy that no one existed before. Like one deal we did, which was brought by a member who made his fortune in the aviation industry. He said, this team is the best team I've ever worked with. And now they have an opportunity where they buy airplane engines, they do one of two things with them. Either they lease the engines to a major carrier, and in that case, you know exactly what the yield's going to be, because the major carrier is not going to go under. Or he said an airplane engine has, and he gave the number, some very high number of component parts, I think in the thousands. And he said, this team knows exactly how to take apart the engine, knows exactly what each part is worth, and knows exactly who to sell it to. So it adds up to something far more than the cost of the engine. And that's one we did. And we've done, who in the group? Well, this member in Texas knew, but I didn't know. Like, I never thought about airline engines before. I mean, he spent his career in them, but it was interesting to me. I did that one. And
when was that? How long ago?
We've actually done two with these guys now. One was over a year. One was probably maybe almost 18 months ago now. And one was more recent.
So the 18 month ago one already has been doing well?
Doing great. I mean, it already returned the capital, maybe at this point more than the capital, and it's still yielding every month.
Amazing.
Yeah. So everything from that to music royalties to loans to government contractors. I mean, a real diverse array of opportunities get presented and get invested in, and members have the benefit of the community to really help understand and assess these things. And in the process, members have just become really good friends and often colleagues with each other on all kinds of things, because they build this respect in the community through how people think about or are interested in these kinds of alternative investments. And that kind of respect and trust, which is also cultivated we're doing like 200 events a year now, at these events and other forums, people end up just doing all kinds of things together, both on and off the platform.
And is this retail investments, accredited only investments, qualified investments? I only ask this for the sake of the audience looking to try to reach out to get a referral, et cetera.
These are the kinds of investments that people are making. The minimums are, you know, typically, but really always 100,000 or more.
Perfect. And outside of the actual investments and the investment conversations, what are the other interactions that are happening of how people are getting to know each other, or the physical events or digital events or other touch points?
Yeah, we do about 200 in-person events a year in the cities where we have a significant presence, which is everywhere from New York to Miami to London to Chicago and many others. And the events can be everything from a small dinner focused around a specific topic, like we did a crypto one last week, to a trip to Israel, to a trip to the Berkshire Hathaway conference. So it's everything from just a small gathering around a topic, sometimes about that topic, sometimes it might be a poker night, a cigar night, really just a way to get people to know each other and like each other and then think about each other a lot, because then they'll do more things with and for each other. So we do all those events, and the community has also really come together very powerfully around philanthropy. I mean, after October 7th, the 3i members community raised something like $15 million for United Hatzalah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's just the community just comes together for all things commercial, philanthropic, social. I mean, people are hiring each other's kids as interns, setting each other's kids up on dates. I mean, anything you could think of.
And setting each other's kids up for dates. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's just become a community of great friends. And, you know, every community's got to be about something, right? So this community is about really alternative investments. But it's a community of people, and really good people, because, and I say good people, that's really important, because we also have an important function within the company, which is that when one member reaches out to another member with a question about anything and every, it could be anything, could be, I'll be in Munich next week, anyone I should have dinner with, to I'm selling my company, is there anybody I should talk with about the various structures I might want to use? It could be anything. We want another member who can help to raise his or her hand and be excited, enthusiastic to say, I'm excited to help, not, I don't know who this person is. So all the members are really community focused and pro-social, and always eager to help each other with whatever anyone's working on or thinking about.
Amazing. There's quite a few of these platforms, I would call networks, that have popped up since COVID. Why do you think that happened at that time?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't really know about many of them except 3i members. So I don't know if it's only since COVID. I mean, you know, de Tocqueville, and really the greatest book about America ever written, Democracy in America, you know, it's, as you get older, you just marvel at how he wrote this at age 25 and 26, but he did. You know, he talked about how America is really a nation of joiners. And he was comparing it to what he knew and had observed in France, and he was kind of stunned by how Americans love to associate with one another. I think that was a word he used. Americans love to associate with one another, and associate with one another formally in groups and organizations. And it was so true in Tocqueville's day in 1825 or 26 that it became a major observation of his when he came to America, and it's just been a sustaining feature of the American character and culture, is that Americans love to associate and do things in fellowship. And I think one of the reasons why this is such a great country is because of the truth of Tocqueville's observation. So I don't think this would have been a post-COVID phenomenon. I think it's an American phenomenon that Americans love to associate, and truly good and great things can derive from the right kinds of association. And I think 3i members is one manifestation of that.
Perfect. So our guests are curious too. Sorry, our listeners are curious too. They want to be as smart as you if possible. So what are you listening to? What are you watching? What are you reading that makes Mark Mark?
Oh, well, thank you. So, I study the Bible every day. So, my study is basically just Genesis through Deuteronomy. And I have an addiction to exercise. I have to, I run 6 miles every morning. I've not missed a day in like 20 years. It's an addiction. And on the treadmill, and I study the Bible on the treadmill. So I do it in double speed. So it's really 2 hours, 2 hours each morning. So now an hour in double speed. And so I study the Bible. And the reason why I study the Bible is I think the all of life's great questions, all of life's most practical and enduring and current questions are asked and answered in this awesome ancient document, which is ours to read and to study. So the more I study the Bible, the more I realize how much more there is to learn and to know, and the more I want to study. So I'm fortunate to be able to do it every day.
Nice. So just to confirm, you're reading the Bible at double speed while running 6 minute miles. Is that right? For an hour?
Yeah, I can't read. I'm either listening or watching.
Okay, got it.
Well, yes. Yes. And you know, this is one of the like many gifts of the internet, right? Like, who would have imagined almost any 15 years ago, 20 years ago, of course, more than that, that this would be possible. But yeah, there's so much really profound and interesting and compelling, and I only speak English and English language, biblical commentary that's totally accessible to anyone who can get on an internet browser. So you put an iPad up on the treadmill, hook in the headphones. I guess I could use Bluetooth. And you have basically 2 hours of really compelling study. And the more you do it, the more you realize that, you know, whatever anyone is thinking about or wrestling with in any given day, the biblical author has thought about, wrestled with, and guided on the exact same question.
So are you using Audible, or what kind of version of this content are you listening to?
Audible is great, but I'm typically doing podcasts. You know, there are lots of good Torah podcasts.
Give me one.
Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg's Parsha Perspectives is terrific. Ephraim runs the Boca Raton Synagogue in Boca Raton. And he has, you know, every week he has an hour long presentation of the Parsha, which is the Torah portion that we study. David Wolpe, who was the, now he's the Rabbi Emeritus of Temple Sinai, also another great English language Torah commentator. Jonathan Sachs, the late Jonathan Sachs, YU Torah is a great source with just so much really profound, accessible English language commentary. Rabbi Riskin, I mean, there's really, there's so much, and it's so accessible to anyone with access to an internet browser. And it's so practical. I mean, it's the Bible announces its purpose in Deuteronomy when Moses says, this is for your benefit. In other words, what Moses is saying is this is a self-help book. So no self-help book is complicated. Every self-help book is practical and can be understood easily by anyone who reads it. And that is absolutely the case with the Bible. And so I would highly recommend biblical study and engagement to anyone who's just asking and answering any questions in their lives, from the most profound questions to the most mundane questions. And very often one realizes that the mundane and the profound questions are one and the same.
And any other content that you that makes you for, you know, reading or watching?
What newspapers do I read? I mean, I read the New York Post every day, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. Those are the three things I read every morning. And then what else? The Jerusalem Post. So throw those. Those are really the four things I'll read every day.
All right. Last question. So we like to put our guests on the spot. 3 years out, what is one investment today that you can recommend or suggest? And obviously, this is not investment advice, but this is just something Mark believes in, that 3 years from now, that will do exceptionally well. And try to be as specific as possible. You already told us Bitcoin, so you can't tell us that one again.
Oh, I was going to say that.
I'm ahead of you.
Right. Okay. Well, all right, Bitcoin. But a 3i member was the one who about a year and a half ago was pounding the table for Chainlink, which I didn't know anything about. But then a bunch of members got together and a couple explained on how Chainlink is necessary for international banking transactions. And so I bought Chainlink at this 3i member's recommendation. And I checked in with him a couple weeks ago, and he said it has not even gotten started. So again, that's secondhand. But if I can't do Bitcoin, I'll do that. But Bitcoin, absolutely. I just think there are so many catalysts, and the fact that it has a limited supply of 21 million, it's actually less than that because some of them are lost. You know, it's Slava used your example of what BlackRock just said about how it needs to be in the income allocation. You got to go with that. And I would say, you know, getting to your category in general, like there are so many compelling opportunities in alts that people who have intellectual curiosity and the willing to invest in accordance with their intellectual curiosity will find such a diverse array of opportunities that they want to consider and probably invest in some of them. And so I would say that your asset class in particular is just has so many of these kinds of opportunities. But if I had to pick one in particular, it would be Bitcoin. If I had to pick a 10-year, it would be Bitcoin in the American economy.
Perfect.
Now, the American economy, that's not an alt, of course, but the American economy is manifested commercially, of course, in the U.S. stock market. So, you know,
if you go back 250 years, it's the ultimate startup. So it is
exactly.
An alt.
That's right.
In biblical times, it's just, you know, in pre-seed, seed stage.
So that's right. That's exactly, that's the truth.
Well, thank you, Mark. This has been absolutely incredible. We have covered so much content across so many topics. We could thank Mitch Jacobs in 2005, 2006 to getting you into alts, but obviously you were already on your own journey with GLG in 1998, having crushed it with such an amazing company, founded other incredible companies. You really told us that, you know, at the Passover Seder, when, you know, when your children ask you, and having that curiosity is so important for you, and alt is about having a non-correlated, high yielding, dependable asset, which is, you know, super interesting. You have a lot of exposure into alts. You love covering all of the various alts categories. You're even into your Elvis collectibles, you know, had some cards, and, you know, now into crypto quite a bit. You juggle across all the various categories. You do believe that BTC is on a potential huge bull run. If you think long term, potentially 100,000 by the end of the year, and even 500,000 for a decade from now. A great quote where America is the greatest country of the human imagination. I love that. You're an enormous bull of America, which is awesome. 3I, the I stand for Interesting Investment Institute. And the ideas always come from someone else. So if you could just expand your network, formalize that, that's really the essence of 3I. You now have over you have 430 members, incredible members, founders, family offices, sports folks, and others. It's only by referral, so everybody should now try to figure out how to get in. There's lots of deals that are crowdsourced, and you guys are doing already incredible work. I love your example, aviation engines, being able to lease them, break them down for parts, and sell them for more than it's worth, music royalties, etc. People should think about 100K as investment as a minimum, so know what you're getting into. Tons of in-person events, so you could build beyond just you know, investments. You could actually build your network, which can be so important for life. Democracy in America, the whole idea of a nation of joiners, I've never heard that one before. And you're the first person who mentioned studying the Bible every day. And you're definitely the first person who said studying the Bible every day on the treadmill, which I think is the essence of Mark being Mark. Now that I've done, you know, 50 minutes with you, giving us, you know, a whole slew of Torah podcasts, which we'll have to check out. And right after you listen to the Torah podcast, there's The American Economy, BTC, and Chainlink. We have you on the spot to be able to see those investments. Thank you so much, Mark.
Slava, thank you so much.
Smart Humans with Slava Rubin is a podcast brought to you by the team at Vincent. Any data, text, or other content in this podcast is provided as general market information and not as investment advice. Past performance is not necessarily an indicator of future results. For more information on alternative investing, check out Vincent at www.withvincent.com.